from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. On Saturday, the federal government said that it would resume accepting renewal applications from young immigrants previously approved for the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA program. The move came in response to a court ruling last week granting a preliminary injunction against the Trump administration's plan to end DACA. The injunction stemmed from a suit filed by California Attorney General Javier Becerra, along with other states, arguing that Dreamers would be irreparably harmed by ending the program. The Attorney General joins us in studio now to talk about the case, his ongoing battles with the Trump administration, and other recent news, including a recent $102 million settlement with oil giant BP over allegations that they had overcharged government facilities for almost a decade. Welcome, Javier Becerra. Good to have you here in the flesh.
Michael, great to be with you, and thanks for everything you do.
Thank you for that, and thank you for all that you're doing as well. I mean, you become a kind of, I'm not trying to sound partisan here, but a legal bête noire against many things that are coming out of this administration.
I've been called many things. I'll take that one.
Well, you're being compared to Greg Abbott, you know, from Texas, who was Attorney General, who's bringing suit after suit against Obama.
Yeah, I'll take yours. I'd rather be what you said earlier.
There's much to talk about with you, and let's begin. I mean, you've had so many battles with the president on immigration, on health care, on the environment. But let's just talk about first racist, bigot. The word applies to the President of the United States, to you?
Quacks like a duck, sure sounds like a duck, and he acts like a duck. Yeah, oh, by the way, in many ways. But I don't see how you can do anything but calm that. Let me tell you what I think is worse. The instability, the mental instability. I've been saying this now, the mental instability, the mendacity, and now you add to that the bigotry. Just one of those things in the White House is dangerous, but all of them, it's lethal. We cannot afford to have the leader of the United States and the leader of the free world be the combination of these things.
What's to be done? I mean, we talked about it in the first hour, especially thinking about it in light of Martin Luther King being celebrated on this day, and there's been talk about censure. There's certainly talk about impeachment, but not with a Republican Congress majority. What do you think? I mean, you're doing a lot of lawsuits, but aside from that, that's, you know, in many people's minds, important work to be.
Do what Martin Luther King said, which is you got to get in the way. You got to get into trouble. You got to get into good trouble. John Lewis, a great friend in Congress and one of our great leaders who was part of those marches and part of the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King, would always tell us in our Democratic caucus meetings in the House of Representatives, when we had these big fights, we just got to get in the way and we just got to get into good trouble. And that's exactly what we have to do.
Be careful, I think, are the words you were using about the Trump administration, right? Yeah. What about the Dreamers? I mean, you got this temporary injunction and their fate now. Congress has until March 5th. They've got the possibility of essentially things falling down in terms of keeping things going. There's so much in the works here. But what we were trying to figure out in the first hour of the program, where we were doing a political roundup, is why President Trump would say, when he had all this televised meeting, we'll do anything. It's for love, and I'll sign anything you put in front of me. And then next day he's saying, DACA's dead.
This is what happens when you have a man you can't trust and a man you can't believe in the White House. And so it's going to hurt him as much as it's hurting the rest of us to have a president like that. And so now when he tries to deny that he made those remarks, no one believes him. And that's what happens when people don't believe you and when you're caught lying so often. And I believe that the most important thing we can do is just continue to move forward on DACA. DACA is nowhere near dead. And because we were able to go to court and get a judge to agree with us that the Trump administration acted arbitrarily and capriciously in trying to repeal the DACA program, it is now around. In fact, as of this weekend, Homeland Security had to acknowledge that it's now accepting applications for renewals of DACA for those who had it expiring. And so we believe that this is a good time for Congress to get a good deal on DACA, not to compromise and get bad stuff in a bill simply because Republicans were trying to push their agenda in order to preserve DACA, which Donald Trump threw into chaos.
But you apparently had a deal. I mean, there were three Democrats and three Republicans who said this is going to go forward.
Well, I've seen this movie before. I remember when we would walk out with agreements and all of a sudden people would back away. In 2013, we had an agreement on comprehensive immigration reform, but House Republicans walked away from the deal that got 68 out of 100 votes in the Senate, bipartisan votes. So this is nothing new. And now we're close to seeing Republicans shut down the government, and they're trying to get all sorts of things that have nothing to do with funding our government and the important services. And no Democrat should stand for that.
Of course, the Republicans are saying it's the Democrats who are causing the government shutdown because they're standing too strongly against the president and saying you have to approve DACA.
But, Michael, let's get something straight. When you have 435 members in the House of Representatives, and you need 218 to pass anything, and Democrats have less than 200 members, when you're in the minority, you cannot kill a bill. You don't have the votes to kill a bill. Only Republicans in the majority can kill a bill. And so if we can't get a funding bill, it's not because Democrats vote no for a Republican bill. It's because Republicans won't vote yes for a Republican funding bill. And so when the government shuts down as it did in 2013, it'll be as it was back in 2013 because Republicans aren't willing to vote for their own bill, not Democrats voting for a Republican bill. You want Democratic votes? Make the bill look like Democrats.
You're also suing to halt border construction on the wall. Where's the status of that?
Well, given what we saw with the DACA court ruling, given what we've seen with our environmental cases where we've challenged the Trump administration's actions, where we've won again, I think we have a very strong chance of proving that once again, Donald Trump has acted arbitrarily and capriciously in trying to build a wall in violation of states' rights, in violation of environmental laws, in violation of tribal laws. And so I think we have a strong chance to once again prove that Donald Trump is trying to do things without obeying the law.
And that includes sanctuary cities and California being a sanctuary state?
Same thing. There's an injunction against the Trump administration on that for trying to take away our money for education, health care, or even law enforcement simply because they don't. We are not willing to do their bidding when it comes to federal immigration enforcement.
Now, when you're talking about quacking like a duck and the like, I was reminded of Judge Curiel being told that he had Mexican heritage and therefore he could not acquit himself, needed to recuse himself, unlike Jeff Sessions, in the whole Trump University lawsuit. I've never asked this question of you, but it's curious. I mean, you're of Mexican heritage. How did that affect you, or what kind of response did you have to that?
I guess
it's a man from Indiana who's being told your Mexican heritage
that's
is going
right. Like Judge Curiel, I too was born in this country to individuals of Mexican heritage. I guess in Donald Trump's eyes, I shouldn't be the attorney general for the same reasons that Judge Curiel shouldn't be a judge. And that's why we're standing up. It is perhaps poetic justice that it's the son of immigrants who is, as I keep saying, wielding the legal slingshot against Donald Trump in protecting our constitutional and civil rights. And so far, we haven't lost a case. So batting 1,000 ain't bad.
Our guest is California Attorney General Javier Becerra. He's with me here, and you can be with us. Let me tell you, in fact, if you have questions or comments for the Attorney General, how you can join the program. We invite you to do that now. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. Feel free to call in with any questions or comments. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but we do welcome your involvement, and the time to join us would be now. Wondering about, let's talk about BP, because this was a big victory. They were overcharging for national gas, and you won a $102 million lawsuit. This was out of a case back in 2012 with a whistleblower, and it's a big victory. I mean, by any standards, it's one of the biggest in terms of money that we've seen come down the pike.
And in terms of whistleblower cases, I think if not the biggest, certainly, as you said, substantial to show that if we can work with some of these whistleblowers who are courageous enough to come forward, we can get some things done. You know, I just saw the movie The Post last night with my wife. The importance of people who are willing to blow the whistle on wrongdoers in government is crucial. And our statutes that give whistleblowers not just protection, but the incentive to come forward is critical if we're going to have democracy, have a First Amendment that really means something, a Fourth Amendment that stands for something, a 14th Amendment that will live for everyone. And so my sense is that moving forward, we're going to have an opportunity to do some good things so long as we all stand up for the rights that we have right now.
Our guest in Studio Thursday, sitting right where you were, was Daniel Ellsberg, and he was talking about how important whistleblowing is from so many vantage points. But, of course, his new book is about nuclear problems that we have, which are getting, I'm sorry to say, I don't want to sound grim here, but, you know, the Trump administration also wants to expand nuclear armaments, but we won't go there. We want to stay with the legal issues. You're the attorney general. And let me ask you about immigrants at the Richmond jail. I know this is something that you're not necessarily in full liberty to talk about now because it's coming under review, but there have been reports, and I'll say this for listeners, allegations of mistreatment, particularly of women immigrants in the detention center. And not only in Richmond, but really, I think you're putting this under investigation throughout the state.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Working with the legislature, I have now been given the authority and some resources to actually conduct reviews of all the detention facilities that hold individuals for civil immigration violations. And what we're doing is we're going to go to each of those detention facilities, some privately owned, some publicly operated, and we're going to make sure that we take a close look per the statute that now authorizes us to do so. Richmond was in Stanislaus County. We've gone in. We'll continue to go into places and we'll take a look. But you're right. I have to be somewhat circumspect in what I say.
Well, I do too. But female detainees have issued complaints about being denied access to bathrooms, about complaints on insufficient health care and not getting educational materials. There's a whole range of things here that's coming under investigation. And I should say that Sheriff David Livingston has denied those complaints. So got your work cut out for you here. Let me go to our callers and let's begin with a caller from Fremont. Kunal, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. As painful and as urgent the DACA and Dreamer situation is, there is another class of immigrants who are suffering and have been enduring uncertainty for a very long time, some for decades now, and they are the legal immigrants in employment-based backlogs. And despite being approved for immigration for decades or long, they don't have green cards. They have been waiting very patiently in line. Their spouses will not be allowed to work soon after President Trump rescinds the rule. Their children risk aging out when they turn 21 and have to leave U.S. And they are the people who followed all the laws and are trying to immigrate legally. So not one Democrat is speaking out for them. It is ironic that immigrants, especially from poor countries, tend to agree more with Democrats and their policies, but the only policies that are going to help legal immigrants look like are coming from Republicans like Tom Cotton, Kevin Yoder of Kansas, Representative Goodlatte, and President Trump. So I'd like to know, Attorney General, what you think about this.
Kunal, thanks for the question, and you actually raised very strong points. But I'll go back to what I mentioned about the 2013 immigration reform bill that passed the House bipartisanly, Republicans and Democrats in the Senate, with 68 votes. That did address the very issue that you speak about, because one of the things that many of us believe drives undocumented immigration is that, as Kunal has said, there are people who are waiting to receive their visas, who are waiting and waiting and waiting for years, and they get frustrated, and oftentimes they get desperate, and sometimes they will come without documentation, or they'll overstay a visitor visa or some other visa that they have and then become undocumented. And the comprehensive reform that passed the Senate in 2013 actually provided a fix to relieve those backlogs. And so we have solutions, because Kunal is right. You have to take care of those who are trying to do it the right way as well. The difficulty is Republicans in the Senate, some of them were willing to go with the bill. But Kunal, please go talk to those Republicans you talk about in the that you mentioned or you may know in the House. Because if you'll recall, in 2013, 2014, the House Republican leadership, Paul Ryan and everyone else, would not permit one single vote of that bipartisan comprehensive fix on immigration in 2013 and 2014 on the House floor. And as a result, we are where we are today. And Kunal makes a very good point.
Talking with California Attorney General Javier Becerra, let me go to more of your calls, and let's go to Berkeley. Peter, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Attorney General, what can we do to provide all Californians a guarantee of legal representation under civil law as well as the guarantee that we do have nationally under criminal law?
Ooh, Peter, great question. To do that nationally, Because, again, the reason that there is a protection for you have legal rights in any criminal proceeding is because under the Constitution it is considered necessary in order to have your rights protected in any type of criminal action. Speaking technically, in order to do something on the civil side, you'd have to have a national statute that allows that to happen. We could do that on a state level as well. Our state could go ahead and provide the types of protections under civil actions that we provide under criminal actions. Then you're talking about the resources. And Peter, you and I know that what we need to do then is we would have to lobby to get a legislature and a governor that would be willing to commit the funding to help make that happen. Legal services for many decades has been sort of the answer that America's put forward. But as you probably have seen, the funding for legal services at the national level has been cut decade after decade. My first job out of Stanford Law School was working as a legal aid attorney representing folks who were mentally ill. I made $18,000 a year. But you know what? I was enriched in so many different ways. So we can do it, Peter. It's just we have to have the will and the resources to do it.
And let me thank Peter for the call. You know, when you're talking about California's history with immigration, I can't help thinking about something I read that you were saying recently about how, keep in perspective, Proposition 187 that Pete Wilson, former governor, put forward was really very much an anti-immigration proposition, and it got a lot of national play and seemed to have a good deal of support here in California. The state has turned, you know, very blue, and, you know, now we have people like you in office pushing on behalf of immigrants. It's a sea change of major proportions.
A dramatic. It was a pivot point for us, Michael. Prop 187 was as anti-immigrant as any of the initiatives that you see popping out of these different states, Arizona, Texas, and so forth. And it passed in California as an initiative by close to 60%. And it's not much different. Here's the deal, though, as I think most of us in our state know. We're about a generation ahead of the rest of the country. The rest of the country is going to be where we are on immigration, on diversity, on clean energy, on how we treat our immigrant brothers and sisters.
You mean just because of numbers?
Not just because of numbers, because I think it's been good for our state and it'll be good for the country. Let's put it this way. You don't become the sixth largest economy by just sitting back. You do things, and you are inclusive. You incorporate people. My dad got to the sixth grade. My mom didn't come to this country till she was 18, yet their four children all got to see what a college looks like, and I'm the first to get that four-year college degree. But as I like to say, for a guy who couldn't walk into a restaurant when he was a young man because of the signs that said no dogs or Mexicans allowed here in California, getting to walk into the White House and meet the president of the United States, not this one, but a president, that's a big deal for a guy who didn't get past the sixth grade. California gets it. We got the secret sauce. And so long as we keep doors open, they'll keep building.
Mayor Schaaf says they have the secret sauce in Oakland. I want you to know she said that on this program. These guys have their own secret sauce. Here's Sanford, though. I wonder what your response is to Sanford's comment here. He says, considering California's housing crisis, how can any politician justify allowing millions of illegal aliens to take our housing while Americans are living under bridges and camping on sidewalks?
I'd love to be able to engage with Sanford on that, because there is no one who is undocumented who gets housing. The only housing that an undocumented person can seek is housing that he or she can pay for out of pocket. There are no housing vouchers for those who are undocumented. And so, once again, it's Sanford, get your facts straight. Please know that we're making sure that our resources are there for those who qualify for them. And in many unfortunate ways, those who are undocumented, who work very, very hard, cannot qualify for those types of government services and benefits because they don't have documentation to be here. They work and very hard for the money they get, and they pay for whatever they are able to secure. That's what happens when you have the tough road. You learn how to do this the hard way, and hopefully your kids grow up understanding that there's a better way, but you got to work to earn it.
Comment from Skip. Why are California taxpayers paying $45 million on alien legal services? Isn't this in violation of the Sixth Amendment?
$45 million for alien legal services. I'd have to, someone would have to send me what that's about, because I could say that that may apply to Martians more than anybody else. I have no idea what that's about. But once again, if you don't have documents to be in this country, let's just get this straight. Those of you who are reading Breitbart or whatever else, you don't get funding from the government, benefits of any sort from the government, if you're undocumented. About the only thing you're entitled to is if you are pregnant and about to deliver and you need medical help to deliver. That's the only time an undocumented individual I'm aware of gets any kind of services. And that we do because you're about to deliver a baby that will be born a U.S. citizen.
L.A. Times, I'm reading from something that appeared there back in June of 2017. Quote, California state lawmakers approved $45 million in a state budget plan to expand legal services for immigrants, a response to the Trump administration's call to increase deportations.
Oh, OK. Now I see where we're going on that. OK, that makes sense. Because, again, the legislature, the representatives of the people chose to enact certain programs. We do that, for example, when it comes to education. We try to give Dreamers, for example, an opportunity to be able to afford college. And so you're right. When the legislature moves in a particular respect, yes, that's because the representatives of the people are taking action on behalf of the people. A great point. And actually, there I stand corrected, because you're right. If the legislature acts where it's allowed. But, for example, federal services and benefits, you'd have to get a Congress to make any kind of change to that.
But the question really had to do with spending money on immigrants, that we're spending money on immigrants, and that's money that we can't spend on, you know, it's this whole America First idea in many respects, or those who are citizens.
Well, as far as I know, they are in America building America, and why we would not want to help the why my parents should not have been able to ask our country to help their son get to Stanford University and graduate, I'm not sure. I could not have afforded Stanford had the American people, the American taxpayers not helped me as a son of immigrants. And today I've got three daughters in college. All three of them are, my wife and I are cutting the checks to pay their tuition. Actually, my wife, she's a doctor. She can afford it more than I can. And I think we've demonstrated that there's a great investment when you help people build and do better for themselves and their kids. And so, you know, the will of the people here is what dictates. And if the legislature, in its wisdom, and I think it was wisdom, chooses to help immigrant families who are working very hard, I'm all for that. But I guarantee you, we need to show that there's value in it for everyone else. And I think most of those immigrant families can prove to you, as my parents can prove to folks, there was value in investing in Manuel and Maria Teresa Becerra.
The argument you often hear gets to political, as I'm sure you're well aware, and the argument goes something like this. Many of these immigrants become Democrats or wind up voting for a Democratic Party, so that enhances the Democratic Party, works against the Republican Party. And we also hear a good deal of complaint, really, and concern and apprehension about the fact that the Latino vote is simply not coming through in the way that many people in the Latino community, especially leadership in the Latino community, would want that vote to come through.
Yeah. Politics is actually a lot easier than you think. There is a logic to it, even though it seems sometimes so illogical, especially these days. If you're not nice to someone, you shouldn't expect them to be prepared to be part of your party and vote for you. That's one thing. The second thing is, I think what we're finding is that the Latino community, like so many communities, has often never been connected to the levers of power and the decision making that goes on. And when you've been distanced from it, you don't recognize it. You don't own it. You don't feel like you're part of it. And so therefore you don't participate in it. And I'm hoping that begins to change as in places like California, folks of Latino heritage begin to see how important it is to participate. At the end of the day, it's all about participation. And I do think that many of these families will recognize that when sometimes they've come from countries where political participation was not only frowned upon, but it could get you killed. I think now hopefully they'll recognize not only is it you don't get killed, but you're doing yourself and your kids a disservice if you don't participate.
And we'll have more callers participate in the program. Let me get Vishal. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Becerra. My question is Prop 47 and realignment. How do you see those two laws impacting crime in our communities.
And you can probably put Prop 57 in there as well. Those initiatives and that legislation have changed the way we're looking at the criminal justice system and incarceration. And for those who may not remember the initiatives or the law that well, it started to change the responsibility for upkeep and housing those who've been convicted of crimes. It talked about what crimes would put you into jail or into the state penitentiary. And what it's done is it's removed a lot of the low-level offenders, the nonviolent offenders, from prisons. And as a result, you see a lot more individuals who are still out in our community and on the streets. I'll tell you what I said and I learned back in the 1980s when, as I mentioned before, I started working as an attorney representing the mentally ill. That was right around the time of what was being called the deinstitutionalization of the mentally ill. Before that, we would always put them in these mental institutions and lock them up. And we were beginning to find that so long as they were able to stay on a regimen of medicine and get some therapy, that they could function and work out in the community. And so we started to deinstitutionalize those who were mentally ill. Good idea, bad follow through, because we took them out of the institutions. We didn't provide them the services so that they could get the therapies and the medicines, and they ended up oftentimes being homeless or committing crime. Same thing applies here. We can deinstitutionalize those who've been convicted of a low-level offense, but if we don't provide them with the habilitation services, the reintegration services, don't be surprised if you see them once again get wrapped up in the criminal justice system in the wrong way. And so it's up to us to follow through on the idea that low-level offenders should not be just locked away and become hardened criminals. It's up to us to make sure we help them integrate once again into the community.
Very little time left, but Doris, let's try to get you on. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you very much, Mr. Krasny and Mr. Becerra. I just wanted to say, in my political life, so to speak, there's been so many occasions where we've had to say to ourselves, not in our name or not in my name. And you, Mr. Becerra, are so refreshing. I've heard you speak a few times on various, you know, news programs, etc. And we should be really, number one, proud that you are our Attorney General, but more importantly, that you are speaking in our name. So I want to thank you for that.
It's a good way to end.
Doris, a great way to start MLK Day.
Yeah, and your parents would be very proud. So thank you for being with us this hour. Javier Becerra, again, is Attorney General for the state of California. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Remind you, you can always let us know what you think about what you hear on Forum or would like to hear on Forum by emailing us, forum@kqed.org. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio and the Forum program, I'm Michael Krasny.